I mean, I assume Congress is going to pass a relief bill, but you know what happens when you assume, right? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday, the 18th of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There is some risk, I know, in making assumptions, especially when it comes to this economy and the Congress of the United States. But we will talk about that. So much to talk about, actually, a mere 6 minutes in which to do it. Heather Long is here from The Washington Post. Hey, Heather.
Hi, Kai.
So let me ask you this. Am I right to assume that there is going to be some kind of package from Congress? Because as we sit here right now, it's kind of up in the air.
It's crazy that it's up in the air, but I'm hopeful we'll have one. Obviously, they think they can do it by Sunday night to prevent a true government shutdown on Monday. But a lot of unemployed people I've been talking to today say this sure looks a lot like the Grinch who stole Christmas.
Yeah, kind of does. Look, let me ask you this, and this is building on some reporting that you did this week about poverty in this economy and how if Congress doesn't get its act together, it will only get worse after a very rough 9 months in this year. What we have in this bill is arguably half a loaf of what's needed, maybe a quarter of a loaf. But is it coming too late? There are some people who are going to fall through the cracks as we get things spun up again if Congress does something.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, even in an ideal world, if we get something passed this weekend or early on Monday, that's still not a lot of time to turn this money around. There's people who have eviction hearings scheduled that I've spoken with for January 5th. Is that still going to happen or not? Or these aid, even the unemployment aid, I just got off the phone with the Georgia Department of Labor, and they said, we're literally sitting here at our computers trying to figure out if we have to shut down unemployment benefits for millions of Georgians in a matter of days, or if we're going to have to extend the payments, you know, add an extra 300 for how many weeks. You can't just, you'd like to think it's all could be done in a matter of seconds, but it can't. And at the moment, the statistic that really jumps out at me this week, we just got that latest data from the census that shows hunger in the United States is now at the highest level in this crisis. The pain is real.
Yeah. And we have seen the pictures of people lined up at food banks. Well, let me actually now turn to something you and I were talking about before we actually turned the microphones on and the gong went off. The nomenclature that people are using to talk about this bill, stimulus versus relief. I am of the personal opinion that we ought to be calling it a relief bill, right? Because there ain't necessarily much to stimulate right now.
You're 100% right, Kai. Stimulus is when we're trying to boost the economy. We're not trying to boost the economy right now. We're trying to get it through the winter and prevent even more devastation, even more hunger, even more evictions, even more small business closing. So this money, this $900 billion that's about to go out, is really, it's the Band-Aid, or people keep referring to it as the bridge to get to the other side. It's not some sort of pump up the economy measure that may be needed next year.
Well, speaking of next year, people do seem to be banking on another package early in the Biden term. You buying that?
I don't think it depends. Obviously, control of the Senate will be very key going forward. I do think there's hope. What I see more optimism, certainly from Wall Street, is hope for some sort of infrastructure package that could possibly pass later in 2021. I know we all chuckle. It didn't happen during the Trump years.
Right.
Yeah. But that would certainly be a boost that would keep us going for a long time. I really worry a lot, Kai, I know you do too, about March, April, May. Yeah. A lot of this aid, even if this bill magically gets passed, they're talking about 10 weeks of unemployment aid. That ends in mid-March. Do we really think the vaccines are going to be widespread enough that people are going to want to venture out again to restaurants by March or April? That's a really big gamble.
Yeah. Yeah, let me change gears here for a second and picking up on that February, March, April thing. There was a Fed meeting this week. Chair Powell gave his usual press conference. And I will say here, we're talking to Rob Kaplan of the Dallas Fed a little bit later in the program. I was struck by, though, the optimism that seemed inherent in some of the Fed's predictions for, the next 6 months once we get through this winter. And I wonder if you were as well.
That was a huge takeaway. What's really odd right now is there's more pessimism about the next 6 months, and Chair Powell reiterated that. Can we get through? How many job losses are going to happen, and how many businesses are going to close forever? I think about U Street Music Hall in D.C. gone forever. But at the same time, there's more optimism about the second half of 2021. Part of it is the vaccine, but part of it also, a lot of people who've been working from home, like you and I, have been saving money. Yeah. There's over $1 trillion more of money sitting in bank accounts. And if that starts to get spent next summer, that could be another additional boost to the economy. So that's why you see Wall Street rallying. That's why you see the Fed being a lot more optimistic that the second half of 2021 could look pretty good. But here's the big but.
Yeah.
Economic growth could recover next year, but jobs, employment, they're not thinking that'll be back till 2024.
Right. And as we've talked about before on this program, jobs in this economy are everything. So what do you make then, actually, just riffing off the jobs thing, of consumers and their mood and their willingness to spend money starting in, say, June, July, August, right? Because that's the whole smash.
It is. I'm a big believer that in this K-shaped recovery story, right. Do I believe the top 50% will be eager to get out and travel and spend and have some famous singer come to their billionaire birthday party? Sure. Get Taylor Swift on the road again. But for the bottom 50%, particularly for those folks that we've been writing about, 12 million people are thousands of dollars in debt right now on rent and utilities, even if they magically get a job back in April or May, their life doesn't turn around right away.
Heather Long at the Washington Post with a bonus mention of Taylor Swift as well. Heather, thanks very much. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Kai.
Have a nice weekend. Wall Street, as this year winds down, a down day at the end of an up week. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, change of gears here. The Super Bowl, as far as we know, is still on for February, though subject to change, I guess. But as teams in the playoff hunt make their final push, in an ordinary year, companies would be hard at work on those multi-zillion dollar ads that would run during the game. Not, of course, this year. Companies are rightly wary of spending that kind of money on an event that, during a pandemic, will almost certainly mean canceled viewing parties and just 20% capacity in the stadium and lower television ratings as well, if the rest of this NFL season is any indication. And there are reports, as Marketplace's Jasmine Garz tells us, that CBS hasn't even been able to fill all of its usually coveted ad spots.
The 2020 Super Bowl featured an ad with celebrities like Megan Thee Stallion and Scary Spice dipping into some creamy Sabra hummus.
And the winner is Scary Spicy.
To air an ad like this reportedly costs around $5.5 million for every 30 seconds. But ahead of this February, some companies are dropping out, like Sabra and longtime advertiser Avocados from Mexico. Professor Tim Calkins teaches marketing at the Kellogg School of Management.
So last year, Fox announced in November that it had sold out the Super Bowl. This month, what at least CBS has said is that they've sold 75 to 80% of the spots.
CBS did not answer to our interview requests in time for deadline. Salim Alhabash, who teaches marketing at Michigan State University, says there's a lot of concern over tone among advertisers during this pandemic.
Some of these conversations are happening in boardrooms. Is what is our ethical responsibility? Is this the best use of our money at this particular moment in time?
But Ross Bennis, an analyst at eMarketer, says CBS will be just fine.
There are thousands of advertisers out there, and there's a finite number of ad slots shown in the Super Bowl. There's going to be others who are willing to take up that inventory.
Companies like Anheuser-Busch and Pringles, who will still be running their ads come February. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
With so much of the world stuck inside, this has been a real good year for gaming. The overall spend is expected to be near $159 billion, which makes this next point all the more amazing. One of the most highly anticipated games of this year, Cyberpunk 2077, it's called. It was 8 years in the making and is turning out to be a disaster, and that is not really an exaggeration. Sony has pulled the game from its online store, and Xbox, which is to say Microsoft, which owns it, is offering refunds. In what should have been a moment of opportunity then, Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has more on what went so wrong.
Cyberpunk 2077 is all about navigating this dystopian future where corporate power has run amok.
Would you rather live in peace as Mr. Nobody, or go down for all times in a blaze of glory?
Well, Cyberpunk 2077 is going down in a blaze of something, and it's not glory.
I have put the controller down in frustration.
Isaac Roman, 32, gamer. He plays on a PS5, which is the most advanced platform you can play on, and he still has problems with the game crashing.
My experience at first was, damn, this is a beautiful game. The production values are insane. However, every half an hour of gaming, it would boot me out of the game.
Complaints about unpolished animation and crashes on older consoles have been much worse. The timing is unfortunate because the timing could have been so good. See Stuck Inside 2020.
From January to August, gaming spending was up 13% year over year.
Carter Rogers is a principal analyst at Superdata, a Nielsen company. So why did all this happen?
The pandemic is part of it in that it is harder to, for example, have people into the office to playtest.
It's also a culture in the gaming industry of burning the candle at both ends, crashing at the last minute, says Tracy Fullerton, director of the USC Game Innovation Lab.
Crunch doesn't work. I mean, honestly, I think it's not a new lesson. It's something that people have been talking about for years.
Hard on the people who make the games, and now hard on the product itself. The Cyberpunk 2077 release may be a reckoning for the industry. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Come Monday morning, if you're looking for something to listen to, might I suggest the Marketplace Morning Report. David Brancaccio and the gang that gets out of bed way too early. Everything you need to know to start your economic day. Coming up.
It feels like the water I was swimming in has turned into molasses.
Well, that can't possibly end well, can it? First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials, down 124 points today, 0.4%, 30,179. The NASDAQ down 9 points, not even a tenth percent, really, 12,755. The S&P 500 off 13 points, 0.3%. 3709. For the week, the S&P, the big winner, up 1.25%. The Dow picked up 0.4%. The NASDAQ gained 3%, which I guess makes it the big winner, huh? Speaking of the S&P, by the way, the exclusive club of 500 companies whose shares make up that index. They get a brand new member on Monday, a little company you might have heard of called Tesla. And because so much money is invested in funds that track the S&P, price of Tesla up just shy of 6% today. If you're planning to do any fuel injected, stepping out over the line this weekend, apologies to the boss. A gallon of regular gas will cost you an average of $2.21 more in New Jersey, up 5 cents from a week ago, 34 cents cheaper than a year ago. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Heather and I were talking about this earlier, the Fed meeting this week. Interest rates still zero, of course. Their big bond buying program still happening. Congressional relief still TBD, obviously, but still needed. Those were the takeaways. Also, as Heather and I talked about, though, some optimism. Robert Kaplan, as promised, is the president and CEO of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, one of the voting members of the Federal Open Market Committee. Mr. Kaplan, it's good to talk to you again, sir.
Good to talk to you, Kai.
Do me a favor, would you, and give me a sense of the mood inside the room or inside the Zoom, I suppose, Tuesday and Wednesday. The Fed is, it seems to the lay observer, a bit more optimistic than it has been in the past couple of months.
Yeah, I think the vaccine has played a big role in increasing our optimism about next year. We're still around the room. We're very concerned, and I'm very concerned about the next 3 to 4 months, though. And we think first quarter of 2021, you're going to have either flat growth or you could even potentially have slightly negative growth in the United States. But having said that, My own forecast is that GDP growth will be in excess of 4% next year. And I think that's indicative of optimism of others in the room about having a strong rebound as we get into latter parts of 2021.
We're all counting on the vaccine. There are millions of people out there, though, who are counting on some kind of relief, some kind of aid from Congress. The chairman said in his press conference the other day, it is widely understood that fiscal relief is needed. I wonder if you think that Congress does understand that it's needed.
Yeah, I think so. After having conversations with members on both sides of the aisle, I think people very well understand that the fact that household income and consumer spending has remained solid this year, despite a significant downturn, I think it's well understood that the primary reason for that is fiscal relief, unemployment benefits. This downturn has not felt like a normal downturn for the whole economy because of fiscal relief. And there are millions of people out there today that are relying on this relief to make ends meet.
I have asked this question elsewhere in the program today, but how important is speed? I mean, do you think we've missed the opportunity to ensure uninterrupted relief?
I think it's my own view that people are living off savings from the initial round of relief, but it feels like the economy is decelerating, partly due to resurgence and partly due to the fact that that fiscal relief savings is running out. And so I think we're at the point here where if Congress decides to do this, it would be welcome and it would help get us through the next 3 or 4 months as we work our way to a vaccine.
What do you make I guess we don't go to dinner parties anymore or gather at softball games, but I imagine you used to have conversations with people when they would say, what do you do? And you said, I run the Dallas Fed. What do you make of the disconnect between equity markets and what we know is happening in the regular economy where it's slowing down and people are hurting?
It has a lot to do with time frame. The economy is about right now. And the equity markets are about what's going to happen over the next 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. If you look out over the horizon, the prospects for the economy, I think, give me a lot of encouragement. We're going to have strong growth next year. We're going to have above trend growth in 2022. The market has the ability to discount that. If you're a family trying to make ends meet, you got to live with the here and now. And that's the disconnect.
Yeah. This is a little sideways, but how do you know what you know? What are you looking at to get a sense of what's going out there in the economy? I mean, the Dallas Fed has a bunch of tools. I'm sure you've got your go-tos.
Yep, we do. So I'm looking at all the normal financial and economic data, but the concern about that in this crisis is that by the time you get the data, it's stale. So more than ever have gone to high-frequency data that's publicly available, cell phone information, mobility information. We look at. And then the other key thing I do is I make at least 25 calls every week, sometimes more, to small businesses, mid-sized businesses, public officials, healthcare officials. And those calls give me a great sense, along with that other data, give me a great sense of where the pain is out there and how the economy is doing. So that's a key part of my process.
Last question, Rob, and then I'll let you go. We had the chairman on a number of years ago, and we talked about what he does to relax, and he plays the guitar. We had John Williams on a number of weeks ago from New York. He's a gamer, it turns out. You know, who knew? With arguably the American economy resting at least partially on your shoulders, what do you do to tune out? What do you do to relax?
I have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old boy, and I can tell you the second I walk in that door, whether I like it or not, I am focused and looking into their eyes, and they're pulling me in two different directions, and that gets me away from the Fed and the U.S. economy pretty quickly.
I hear you. Doesn't get any better than that. Rob Kaplan, he's the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Rob, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Great to talk to you, Kai.
This has been a terrible year for huge chunks of this economy, right? Most terrible, though, for the nurses and doctors and medical professionals working long hours against long odds against this virus, always with the fear that they might get sick themselves. But almost every other doctor and nurse, the ones not on the front lines of pandemic care, has been dealing with the opposite situation, a huge drop in business. And the result, as Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports, is that a lot of them are thinking about leaving the business.
Dr. Ted Mazur felt burned out before the pandemic. At 62, the business of running his ear, nose, and throat practice and the stress of fighting with insurance companies was getting to him. And COVID just made it all worse.
The financial strains of dealing with COVID, with a dramatic drop in practice volume, with the loss of surgeries during the initial outbreak, patients not wanting to come in.
That was hard financially. The volume of patients Mazur was seeing dropped by 75%, which has a lot to do with the fact that his specialty is otolaryngology.
It's a surgical specialty that looks into dark orifices, like noses and ears and deep down throats.
Which you really have to do in person. Mazur did some telehealth, but well into the summer, business was still down 40 or 50%.
I finally decided that we couldn't continue to do what we were doing with a very opaque future for what would happen if we even tried to make it to the end of the year.
In September, Mazur closed his practice for good and retired from medicine a couple years earlier than he'd planned. 8% of doctors have closed their practices because of COVID, according to a survey from the nonprofit Physicians Foundation. That translates to about 16,000 fewer practices nationwide. And nearly a quarter of doctors are considering retiring early, according to another survey from Medscape.
It is at risk of becoming an enormous issue.
Dr. Joseph Valenti is on the board of the Physicians Foundation and a gynecologist in Denton, Texas. He says the pandemic is putting doctors under enormous strain.
They're feeling burned out from the financial aspect. They're feeling burned out from the lack of people believing in science aspect.
It feels like the water I was swimming in has turned into molasses.
Dr. Monique Child is a pediatrician in Anchorage, Alaska, and she says almost everything about being a doctor is harder and slower and more exhausting right now, especially not having answers to so many of the questions her patients ask about COVID.
After 20 years in the field, I feel like with most questions that a new parent might have, I have answers. And in this case, I have a lack of answers and even basic answers.
On top of that, there are what she calls all the normal hassles of a broken healthcare system, which
have become more than can be managed in the midst of a pandemic. And it's demoralizing.
Child can't see herself leaving her patients in the middle of the pandemic. But after, she's planning to take time off.
And maybe take some of that time to think about, like, do I want to go find a different career?
Which is something she says she never thought before. Dr. Joseph Valenti, the gynecologist in Texas, is worried about what will happen if too many doctors hit that point.
We cannot turn out doctors quickly. It's not something we can just crank up the assembly line for, because not only do we have a projected shortage of doctors, but we don't have enough residency slots to train them, even if you graduated them from medical school.
And that, Valenti says, could have major implications for patients and the healthcare system as a whole. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, just because we haven't done it in a while. So the Fed is optimistic, as we heard from Rob Kaplan, once we get through the next 4 or 5 months. You know who else is feeling kind of upbeat? Oil traders. The U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate closed today up 1.5%. It hit $49.28 a barrel at one point. That is its highest since the before times, also the 7th up week in a row for crude. All right, we got to go, but here is your very brief Friday moment of economic context, democracy style. What it takes to keep the government of the United States functioning when Congress simply cannot get its act together. This afternoon, House Democrats released the one page, a single page bill to avoid a shutdown. It reads almost in its entirety, resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that the Continuing Appropriations Act 2021 is further amended by striking the date specified in Section 106, Para 3, and inserting December 20, 2020. That's it. Keeps us going for another 2 days, provided both chambers pass it and the president signs it by midnight. And oh, by the way, figure out some way to do COVID relief. But we'll see about that. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I am Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.